The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Very much. Thank you very much. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 ray@rte.ie. Thanks very much to Catherine Thomas for standing in yesterday. I had a lovely day off, 2 days in a row. What do you do on a day off? Well, I had all sorts of plans. You know, fix the bike, cut the grass, all of those sort of outdoory things, and then walk up to one of the worst days this year. It was terrible, wasn't it? Very, very wet. It was that wet rain. So then what do you do on a day off when it's raining? Well, of course, you go to the cinema. You go to the cinema. I was in the cinema yesterday before midday. Highly unusual if it wasn't for a work viewing of something. And we ended up going to see The Joker, or is it just Joker? And loads of people are talking about it, and they're saying how brilliant Joaquin Phoenix is. And then he is brilliant in it, absolutely brilliant. And there's rarely a scene in the movie that he isn't in. So it was a big job of work for him, and he does it brilliantly. But very disturbing, very disturbing, very grim. There's no hope, very little entertainment in it. It poses big questions about how we live our lives, how we treat people with mental illness. You know, the disenfranchised, the separation, the difference between the rich and the poor. And I just came out of it shell-shocked. It's like I was in around, you know, in the ring with some very good boxer. It probably wasn't a good idea in the end to go and see. So if you have a day off, my advice to you is don't go and see The Joker, in the middle of the day, because it might just upset you. And maybe I suppose that's what art is supposed to do, isn't it? It's supposed to get us thinking, and definitely does. Like, there's none of the cartoon comic book stuff that you'd expect from that franchise. Like, there's nobody flying around. There's nothing that isn't real in it, and that's why it's so disturbing. You know, it's the backstory of the Joker and why is he the way he is. And it's a grim, sad story is his. Brilliant performance, brilliantly shot, all of those things. As a movie, brilliant, couldn't fault it. But just the message is quite depressing, and it's going to stay with me for quite some time. Anyway, good news, we are a nation of givers. We sort of knew this, but it's been confirmed. We are the most generous people in Europe, us Irish. As part of their research, the Charities Aid Foundation's World Giving Index surveyed people by asking if they had donated money, volunteered for a good cause, or helped a stranger. And they discovered that 1 in 7 Irish people donated money to charity, while 1 in 6 helped someone they didn't know. And we saw it at work recently with Kirsten Chadwick. Her fiancé, Kim, had a terrible diving accident off the coast of Cork, and Kirsten and Kim needed money to get Kim back to their native Canada in an air ambulance, and you, who are listening, managed to donate nearly $100,000 in space of less than 10 days. So we're very generous. And we have another example of that coming up, because we spoke to Sharon Connolly back in September about her son Barry's birthday and the fact that he, you know, he has this fascination with cards. And we're going to talk to Sharon to find out how he got on and she got on back then. The only countries ahead of us in generosity, US, Myanmar, New Zealand and Australia. But we're the most generous people in Europe. So give yourself a pat on the back. There you go. And maybe there'll be sort of enforced generosity of spirit in the clamping community. The NTA, the National Transport Agency, have put together, I don't know if this is guidelines or rules or suggestions for clampers. So they're advising clampers against so-called predatory behaviour. Now, you can't prove predatory behaviour on the part of the clampers. They're just doing their job. And you can't prove that they hang around particular spots and, you know, shoot. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. We have our suspicions. I always feel a little bit sorry for clampers. And most of them are good-humoured. But it's a tough enough job to do, isn't it? Tough enough job to do. Anyway, in these guidelines, suggestions, rules set down by the National Transport Agency, you'll be happy to hear that if you come back to find your car being clamped, but where the clamp is not yet locked to the wheel, then clampers should release you. That's one thing. The second thing is, the proposed code, that's what they're calling it, the proposed code of practice also says that if the vehicle is set to be towed away, the owner can have it released if they're back before two wheels have left the ground. And I still think, is this, I don't know if this is real or whether it's one of those urban myths. There's a 10-minute grace period, isn't there? That where if you're supposed to be back at 2 o'clock, they'll give you till 10 past 2 before they'll clamp you. I wonder, is that something that I heard that doesn't exist, or does it exist? I've had some mainly bad experiences, and some of them are my own fault, some of them weren't. And you can't help but be nice to the people then. Recently, I tried to kill a guy with kindness. You have a good day. Make sure you have a really good day now. That's what I said to him as he went off after giving me a ticket. The cuffing season. This sounds like something you'd hear about in a wildlife documentary voiced by David Attenborough. But it's a behaviour, seemingly, that single people involve themselves in at this time of the year. It's when the months get colder, now, the nights get darker, and single people go looking for someone to handcuff themselves to. It says that the definition in Collins Dictionary is, cuffing is a period of autumn and winter when single people are considered likely to seek settled relationships rather than engage in casual affairs. And the young members of the human species gather around watering holes in search of a mate. They involve themselves in very intricate mating dances, usually with Calvin Harris or such like going on in the background. And then they pair off and stay with each other. But seemingly it's short-lived. That's what they're saying. Then in March, you might be cleaning out your wardrobe and you might be reassessing the relationship as well and shedding, you know, the jeans that you don't wear and the partner that you had for the winter, because now you're ready for some summer fun. That's interesting. Cuffing. Cuffing. There's the new word on me, cuffing. Short for handcuffing. And on the relationship thing, just big news from the Love Islanders, Maura Higgins and Curtis Pritchard. People have been watching closely and asking the question, are they an item or are they not? Is it official? Are they exclusive? And they were stringing us along and not giving us an answer. But now, seemingly, they had the official chat and Curtis asked her, you know, are we an item? Are we together? Is this exclusive? And she said yes. So it's official. So seemingly DTR is, you know, you have to define that relationship, DTR. I'm fascinated by this because this thing about exclusivity, back in the day, it was like after, you know, if you sort of contacted somebody after a night out and you met for lunch, then it was exclusive from there on in. But now you can go on for months before you have to express exclusivity. It's all about words. It's all about words. And the Oxford English Dictionary have added 650 words to their new edition. I love this. Nomophobia. It's a very contemporary condition. It's when people have anxiety about not having access to a mobile phone. So nomo, as in no mobile, phobia. Nomophobia. I was watching Raised by the Village on Sunday, and I love that programme. Really well made. Always cry, maybe because I'm tired and I've had a glass of wine. But it was brilliant again on Sunday. And one of the themes that's coming through every week is the relationship between teenagers and their mobile phone. And what's happening is, when they get out to the country and they're dealing with chasing sheep and cleaning out fish and all that sort of thing, and they don't have access to their mobile phone, they don't miss it, which is brilliant. So that tells us a really positive story, that given the right circumstances and given the right activities, that young people won't miss their mobile phones. And the sad thing is that it's not just what you're doing on the mobile phone, it's what you're not doing when you're on the mobile phone, probably more important, because you're not getting out and being active, all of those things. Anyway, nomophobia is one of them. Two new meanings for hanging and steaming, both to do with drinking. So hanging is, and they've been using this in Ireland for years, suffering from a hangover, hanging. Steaming is a state of intense inebriation. Chillax, that's been there for a long time, you know that one. Upstairs, Jen is wondering, will they include the word extra with its new meaning? Now, I hadn't come across this, but it's sort of a, you know, it's beyond the call of duty. So you're looking extra. Or, you know, if you, say, proposed to your girlfriend or boyfriend and you'd laid out a trail of rose petals and it led them to a secluded area with the rose petals making a heart shape. And then you had a string quartet playing whatever, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. And then you get down on one knee and like, that'd be extra, you know, beyond the call of duty. Setting the bar pretty high. So I might use that. What about Come On? Isn't that like everybody uses that? Come on! It's sort of an expression of exasperation, asking somebody to cop on and come on and, you know, look at what they're saying, how they're behaving. Fake news is there as well, as you would expect in the Trump era. And my favourite headline of the day is Flake News. And it's the story of Ange Parker from England, who found a massive 5-inch bran flake. See, flake news. 5-inch bran flake. It is huge. Nearly the size of her hand. She reckons it's 12 times larger than your normal bran flake. Her children, Oscar and India, were thrilled at the supersized find in an 83p box of Harvest Morn bran flakes from Aldi. And the retailer replied, "That's 1 mega bran flake you found there. We're sorry to see this and we'll pass your feedback on to our colleagues here." But Ange said, "My two kids were ridiculously excited to find such a giant bran flake." They put 12 normal bran flakes. And you see, Oscar and India had the best time. It's not the biggest ever, you know. Seemingly there was an 8-inch one found by Oliver Broadfield in Huddersfield back in the day. And then there was a 5.5-inch one found by Stephen Marriott. We don't seem to find big bran flakes in our bran flakes here. Was that a couple of years old now? There was a bran flake in the shape of Ireland. I remember that one, okay. That was a big story. 51551 RAID RTE.E. We're very excited. You might hear it in my voice. We're very excited today because we're getting a chance to talk to Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews. I'm so lucky. So lucky. Because I was brought up, probably like a lot of you, on a diet of The Sound of Music and Mary Poppins. And to speak to the person who brought both of those characters to life with such aplomb, it's going to be a real pleasure. Julie Andrews. Yeah, Julie Andrews on the show today. Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews. There you go. There she is. In full flight, Julie Andrews with Do Re Mi, and we'll be talking to her very shortly. But first, it's very important. Mattress Mick has tweeted a statement overnight. He says, "I've been invited to take part on Dancing with the Stars. What do you think? Yes or no? Cheers." Afternoon, Mick.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
What reaction did you get?
An amazing reaction. I couldn't believe it. I've got a lot of support to do it from my followers. Very little negativity, a lot of positivity. So I had made up my mind, really, as no, I'm not going to do it.
Oh.
But you never know now with the kind of support that's been given to me on Twitter and other platforms, I might change my mind.
Give us an idea of the support you got.
Well, so far we've had over 350,000 impressions on the tweet, over 5,000 likes, comments, I think about 300 or 400.
Yes.
So it's been very, very positive.
So you got a call from the producers of Dancing with the Stars.
And I got a letter.
A letter? You got a letter?
First of all, a call, and then a confirmation in an email.
Right, okay. And were they checking availability or asking you, would you do it?
No, they were asking would I be interested or would I consider myself as a candidate for the show.
Yeah. Why would you not do it, Mick?
Well, two things, Ray. First of all, it takes a lot of time. The rehearsing, and I'd be out of my business for quite a bit. Then secondly, I don't know if I have the energy. It's a lot of dancing, a lot of practice, a lot of moves, and I don't know if I'd be up to it or not, truthfully.
Do you mind me asking what age you are? Because we spoke to you.
I'm in my 60s.
You're in your 60s, right.
And, yes.
And do you like dancing?
I was always a great dancer. I enjoyed dancing as a teenager, but it wasn't this type of dancing. It was, you know, discotheque dancing that I was very good at.
Yeah, but if you can dance at all, they tell you what to do. It's about rhythm.
It's about rhythm, it's about getting it right. But I'd be afraid I might make a fool of myself, Ray.
Yeah. Yeah, but you have to let go. You know, like, in life, sometimes when you feel you're going to make a fool, that's when you sort of enjoy yourself most, and that's when you find out most about yourself, and that's why you get, when you get most, you know, feedback, all those things. And can I ask you, like, would you, could you be convinced to change your, you haven't told them definitely no yet, have you?
No, I haven't responded to them as yet, no. I was waiting to see what kind of support was given to me outside of my own circle, and that's been very positive. But it's very hard to know what to do.
Yeah, I can understand that.
It really is. I'd love to do it. One part of me says, yes, go for it. The second part of me says, well, can I do it? Will I not make a fool out of myself? Will people not laugh at me? And I don't mind people laughing at me. You know, I do it all the time in my funny way of marketing my business.
Yes.
But I don't know about this. I really don't.
But you have been game for a laugh in the past. I've watched videos where you danced around a DeLorean and did a rap, and you know, and you had a number of songs. Well, sort of songs that went viral.
That's right.
Yeah, so you're no stranger to this sort of thing.
No, I agree with you. This is why I'm still undecided. I just would hope that I'd have enough energy and enough time. So I'm going to think about it.
You're going to think about it, okay.
I'm going to really give it some strong thoughts, particularly after the positive reaction that I got from the tweet.
Great. So it's not a definite no. We got on to Dancing with the Stars and we got a statement back saying RT won't be commenting on speculation.
Okay. Well, that's playing it close to the chest.
Yes,
isn't it?
I hope you don't get in trouble now for going public on it.
Well, again, I'm used to a bit of trouble, Ray, as well.
Right, Mick, whatever happens, good luck with it.
Thank you very much for the call. Thank you.
Yeah. See, Mick, before you go, we were hoping that you'd be definitive. Because,
well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because then I was going to say at the very end, oh, that's there. Thanks very much to Mattress Mick. We've put those rumours to bed. See you. Good luck. See you. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye. Bye.
Do what Mick says, somebody. And Deirdre says, dancing around the kitchen, cooking the dinner, tell Julie we love her in this house. I've been looking forward to hearing Julie Andrews. I always wanted to see the places associated with the Sound of Music. Went to Austria a few years ago and my dream was fulfilled. My favourite was the palace with the man-made lake. Heavenly, says Catherine and Kerry. And on clampers, Ray, I'm married to a wonderful man. He's a fantastic father and husband, and he's a clapper. He gets daily verbal and occasional physical abuse. He's been told to go hang himself. He took the job during the recession and has been doing it for 10 years. He doesn't get commission and he doesn't go out to hurt people. He just does his job like the majority of other people. He gets very down sometimes over the abuse. I just wish people would think before they say throwaway remarks. Clampers are people with families too. Well, thanks for sending that in to us. And I think I was sort of trying to get that message across. And there's other things coming in there about Julie Andrews and clapping. 5 on 5 on Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for text. Now, a month ago tomorrow, we spoke to Sharon Connolly on the phone. Sharon is mum to Barry, who has autism. And the next day, which would have been the Thursday of that week, Barry was celebrating his 30th birthday. And Sharon told us how Barry loves receiving cards and loves reading the verses on them. And she had put it up on Facebook, and we had spotted an article in the Evening Herald. And we gave out Sharon and Barry's address and invited people to send him birthday cards. Well, let's see what happened next. Good afternoon, Sharon.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. So, the postman was there this morning?
He was here this morning, yeah. Another 5 cards.
And has the postman been at your house every day since September 18th?
He wasn't here yesterday.
All right, that was the first day, but probably.
That was the first day in a month that she hasn't been here.
Oh, she, sorry.
It's a she, yeah.
What's her name?
Linda.
Hi, Linda. Right.
If she's talking to me still.
She's been very busy around Beliver, County Meath, hasn't she?
She's been busy, yeah. You could say that.
Right. So, last count, how many cards did Barry receive?
Well, I just have it here on a sticky note. It was 4,837. But that was up to, we'll say, the middle of last week. So, he'd probably have to get another maybe 20 or 25
right
between today and last week. So it's about 4,850.
My word. Isn't that amazing?
Ray, I'll tell you something. Amazing. It's above amazing.
Yes.
It really is.
Yeah. We were just saying there that from new research that we're the most generous nation in Europe.
Well, I'll tell you something, Ray. Like, you know, I put up on Facebook, you know, people know the story about Barry and autism, and he loves reading cards, and I knew he wasn't going to get any, and I put up on Facebook, if anybody would like to send him a card, that'd be brilliant. Thinking he'd get maybe 20 or 30 cards, which would have been amazing.
Mm.
And to think that people, Ray, from every corner of the world have sent cards and gifts and scratch cards and just...
Brilliant.
I can't put into words how myself and Seamus felt. It was amazing.
And would Barry be aware of the extent of this?
When he got to about 2,000 cards, he says, "Mama, no more cards, please." Because he was just up my house. There was a mountain of envelopes and paper. And then he kind of got to the stage where he says, "Mom, how do people know it's my birthday?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Ah, but you're Barry. Everybody loves Barry, sure, you know." And he says, "But Mom, I'm just a regular guy. I'm not famous." Yeah. And I said, "You are famous, Barry." "No, no, Mum, I'm a regular guy." And then he was worrying about people sending him a card. And I'm like, "Oh my God." You know, his little... he's just such a pet.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And some famous people sent cards and letters.
They did, can I say?
Yeah, of course you can.
Well, I suppose the most famous one is the Taoiseach. He sent him a letter. I just couldn't believe it. He got Fair City, because they were 30 the same week.
Oh, yes, because we had Johnny Ward on the same day, actually, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
They sent a card and some of the cast signed it. Oh, my God, who else? Rosemary Smith.
She's a lovely woman.
She sent him a lovely letter and a card. It was a really now inspiring letter. Seamus Coleman.
Yes.
He sent him a signed jersey and a signed photograph and a signed book. Oh God, who else there?
That's a pretty stellar list there so far.
Yeah.
And
Shane Lowry's mum and dad,
right.
And a signed photo of Shane. Yes,
right.
I'm telling you, it was amazing.
How do you feel now? You know, it's 4 weeks on. How do you feel?
I just feel, Ray, that, you know, there's so much bad news in the world, and to think that people from all over Ireland, I'd say every county in Ireland, people sent Barry cards, and schools, the amount of school kids that made cards and sent them, and, oh my God, and then some of the letters I was reading that people sent me, I swear to God, Ray, I was here one night and I was crying. I was just sat at the table crying at the letters, and to think that people done this for a young man with autism that they don't know from Adam, and that people would do that. And I didn't tell you the last of it, Barry big into Naruto. Do you know Naruto? It's a Japanese anime cartoony thing.
Right.
He's massive into that. And didn't he get 2 cards from Japan? Oh, sure, he was made up. Do you know, like, people from Japan, there was people from Australia, America, Germany, France, Argentina, Canada, all over Ireland, England, Scotland.
It's such a positive story, isn't it? Such a positive feel-good story.
Ray, I tell you something, I will never be able to repay the people of Ireland and abroad for what they've done for this family. Because I knew he wasn't going to get cards. You know, I knew he wouldn't. And as I said to you, and people know, like, Barry's 30, he has autism. He will never have a life that another 30-year-old lad would have. You know, he'll never be off with the lads or do anything like that.
Mm.
And to think that people would send a card to him was just... I just can't put into words, Ray, how I feel.
People say, you know, this has restored my faith in human kindness, etc. But human kindness is always there. It's just looking for a way to get out, an opportunity like you offer them. And I'll say this again, and I said it back 4 weeks ago, that it was a beautiful thing that you did. And I know you said at the time that any mother would do it, but I don't know about that. I think it was very special what you did. Well, you did a very special thing. So he's very lucky to have you.
As somebody said to me, you know, you're an extraordinary woman. I am not. I'm an ordinary mum of an extraordinary child.
Okay.
That's the way I look at it, because you know the story with Barry.
Yeah,
he locked in a room.
You were told that, early on.
Yeah. And, you know, him today, he's Barry.
And he's working in the Ardboyne Hotel, and he goes to
he was there today,
the Praxis Care Centre in Navan.
And he's in Praxis Care in Navan, and he is in the St Vincent de Paul shop in Navan on a Thursday.
Great.
So life is really good for him. And then to think the people went out of the way to do what they did, it's just, it has restored my faith in people.
Okay. Well, that's,
you know, it
that's
really
brilliant.
Has.
That's brilliant. And it's obviously embellished your life in a big way. Sharon, we'll talk again, I'm sure.
We will indeed, Ray.
Yeah, and say hello to Barry and Seamus for us and the rest of the family. Thanks, Sharon.
Okay, Ray, take care.
Right, see you now. Right, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Well, this is a real treat and a real privilege because on the line from somewhere in the United States of America is Dame Julie Andrews. Hello.
Hello, Ray.
This is, for me, this is, you know, I'm 55. My mother was a huge fan of the musicals, so we were brought up watching Mary Poppins and The Sound of Music. We had it on vinyl. It was played over and over again. So, and my name is Ray, a name I call myself. So there, all
yes,
that.
Yes, of course. A drop of golden sun, no
yes,
less.
Yes.
Right.
So it's brilliant to talk to you. How are you? Are you good?
I'm very good, thank you. Yes, it's a beautiful day where I am, and I'm very happy to be talking to you.
Yeah, and Homework, A Memoir of My Hollywood Years, is your second memoir. It's the follow-up to Home.
That's right.
So it starts up really when you travel to the States and begin your acting career.
That's right. It is the first memoir, which was published about 10 years ago, dealt with my early life and my early years and the time in, you know, when I was with my parents in music hall and touring around England a lot and going to America for the first time to Broadway. And then that ended as Walt Disney asked if I'd like to come to Hollywood to do Mary Poppins, which was my first film and a tremendous thrill and surprise. And it was such a lucky break. And so I thought that would be the beginning of my second memoir.
And what was it like meeting Walt Disney for the first time?
Lovely. He came to see me on Broadway when I was in a show called Camelot on Broadway with Richard Burton and Robert Goulet. And I thought he was just coming backstage to say hello or say that he liked the show, hopefully. But he came back and started talking about this live-action animation film that he wanted to do. And would I be interested in coming to Hollywood and hearing the songs? And I think he was seeing the show because I'd been recommended to him, and he just made up his mind then and there that he was going to ask me. So it was a great thrill. And I said, oh, Mr. Disney, I'd love to come, but I'm afraid I'm pregnant. And he said, oh, that's okay, we'll wait. And I had no idea how long pre-production takes on a movie. And by the time I'd had my lovely daughter, who has collaborated with me on this memoir, my daughter Emma, by that time she was 2 months old, and we headed off to Hollywood, and that's the beginning of the book.
And you headed off with your then husband and Emma's dad, Tony.
A wonderful theatre designer.
Yeah.
And Walt had said to him, what do you do, young man? And when Tony explained, he said, well, bring your portfolio to Hollywood. And he hired him instantly to do the costumes and most of the sets for the film, which Walt's greatest talent was spotting talent, I think. And he was very generous, very kind, and kind of sort of twinkly and like a really kindly uncle in a way, but very smart also.
You were quite young, but I suppose you were older than your years because of your early years and how independent you had to become. You were driving your mother home drunk at the age of 15. You were taking control of but you were taking control of the family finances. You owned a house when you were 17. You know, so you were older than your years, than your contemporaries.
I think I was, and yet I felt as green as could be. And in terms of making movies, I had no idea how to go about it. And so I learned a lot on Mary Poppins and subsequently on all the others.
Mm. It's such a joy to watch and stands the test of all those years, Mary Poppins. And you're so brilliant in it.
Well, thank you. But you know what's amazing is that these days that there is so much more available for the trick photography and the things that they can use. But in those days, they had to really work on how to hide the wires that held me up when I was flying or whatever. And you don't spot any of it on the movie. And to this day, it looks as fresh as any of the more modern
Okay, you let out a few secrets in the book. So tell us about the carpet bag, Mary Poppins' carpet bag, where she was able to take out a standard lamp out of it. And it looked like it
had... Do I really have to? Well, I like you to think it was magic.
Okay, if you want to.
No, it's fine. It was, of course, a number of different shots, which, you know, the carpet bag and then the table, they didn't shoot. And, of course, the lamp went right through the carpet bag and I pulled it out. But then afterwards, they laid in little Matthew, the young boy in the movie, Michael is what his name was in the movie. They had him under the table wondering how on earth I managed that. Yeah. So the two pieces were put together. I'm still not making it clear. I hardly know myself, but it did work.
It worked. It worked brilliantly. And that, because Walt had said to you initially that it's a combination of live action and animation. And there's that, you know, supercalifragilistic and all that. It's with you and Dick Van Dyke on the
That's
the
almost
horses.
One of my favourite moments. I just so enjoyed it. Because it reminded me of my vaudeville musical days. It was really that kind of rumty-tum kind of song in a way.
Mm. And did you sing it? I'm trying to remember it now. Did you spell it backwards or sing it backwards?
I said it backwards.
That's
funnily enough, my then husband Tony said, "Why don't you try saying it backwards?" And we put it in at the last minute, and I can still do it. And it's gotten me past many a young child on the street who says, "I can say Super Cal." I said, "Yeah, but can you say it backwards?"
Well, you know you're going to have to do it now, Julie Andrews.
Yeah,
yes,
I can do it.
Okay.
Docious Ali Expiastic Fragicali Rupus. It's actually in syllabic backwards form, but it worked.
It works brilliantly. It works brilliantly. And did you realise when you were shooting it that it was going to be so special?
I don't think you ever can guarantee or know that. I only know that I was learning on my feet so fast, enjoying myself hugely. In fact, Ray, the crazy thing is that I made three films in a row, none of which were released, and suddenly they were all released at the same time. Because Mary Poppins took a long time for the special effects
post-production,
to be laid
yes.
in and so on. And then my second movie took a while to edit. Then there came the Sound of Music. And eventually they all came out around the same time or the same year. And it was then that I realized, you know, what an assault it might be in terms of publicity and things like that.
And how did it affect you?
I think it knocked me sideways for a bit, but thank God for the early years when my mother used to say, "Don't you dare boast and don't you pull rank and you know, anybody can do what you do, so, you know, do it better." And one way and another, she had raised me very well in that sense. And so I think common sense came into it, and I realised how fortunate I was.
With full respect to your mum, not everybody could do what you do.
Well, that's very sweet of you.
I'd love to music, but I'm not. But I didn't realise that you had a five octave coloratura soprano range.
I did. It was an absolute, you know, child prodigy freak voice when I was young. And I think everybody was surprised. I was surprised when my stepfather discovered it. He gave me some singing lessons because he was a fine tenor.
Ted
and
Andrews,
he and my mother were, this is my stepfather, and he and my mother were also in music hall, and he started giving me some singing lessons, really to, I think, get close to this new stepdaughter that didn't like him very much at that time.
Yeah. And because he then, not passed you on, but he got
he did,
his...
No, he very smartly he got me with a very good teacher.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And she took you under her wing, and I suppose that was a bit of luck. And there has been sliding door situations in your life where you've been quite lucky.
Oh, my God. I really do mean this, Ray. I have been so incredibly fortunate, and I know it, and I... it's just been a phenomenal life, and I've relished every moment of it, really.
Yeah. Because, and I didn't know this, but My Fair Lady, if you were cast in that, you may not have been cast in Mary Poppins. And and you had starred in that on Broadway.
You're talking about the movie version of
yes,
My Fair Lady.
Yes, yeah, you're in the musical version, but then when the movie came along, you went, did you audition for that?
No, I didn't, because at that time I was just a name on Broadway, but... certainly had wasn't known all over the world, and Warner Brothers, who made the film of My Fair Lady, they really wanted a star and somebody that was well known, and of course chose lovely Audrey Hepburn, who turned out to be a great friend of mine eventually, and we bonded, and she was a lovely lady.
Yeah. You know, Hollywood was so different then. Well, it appeared to be so glamorous, and you were put on a pedestal, weren't you? And it was if
the reason for writing the book, I think, Ray, is to show that it's not all red carpet and glamour, and that there's very, very hard work behind all of it. And I really wanted to note that down in this memoir.
And you do. Ireland gets an honorary mention because when you were shooting Darling Lily, you starred alongside Rock Hudson, and you're
in Maynooth. Yes, in Carton.
The house.
Carton.
Yes, it's a hotel now, and the Irish rugby team use it as their training camp, among other things. But they've made it.
You mean Carton? They really?
Yes, Carton House is a lovely hotel now. If you're ever back,
I know that. I've been there subsequently.
Yeah. So tell us, what was that? 1968.
Yes. 68 it was.
Yeah, and you also shot in the Olympia Theatre in Dublin.
Yes.
Yes.
And it brought back many memories of the earlier days in vaudeville and so on. Mm. But, I think I performed before that in Ireland once or twice, but mostly, of course, it was going around England. But I loved being in Ireland, and I love that country, and the green there is the prettiest green you could ever imagine.
Yeah. So on to The Sound of Music then, speaking of green, as you come over the crest of the hill, and the hills are alive. and that's, I always thought the colour of your hair was because of the processes that they use at the time, sort of, what was it called? Some colour deluxe or something like that.
But oh, gosh, that's funny.
Yes.
You mean it? No, my hair was pretty much dyed at the time to that blonde colour.
Yeah.
And It was right for the role, but it came out of an accident. I was meant to have to be brown with more highlights, but the highlights went wrong. And suddenly they said, oh, well, we better make you blonde all over then. And it worked because of it being set in Austria.
Yeah.
And I looked like I hope I did at least, a sort of Austrian girl because of that hair color.
And how do you, because you must have thought about this over and over again throughout your life, the success... and the way Mary Poppins and The Sound of Music have stood the test of time, why do you think they've done that?
Oh, a few reasons, but I think because they were beautifully crafted movies. Sound of Music was up there with some of the loveliest musicals, you know, West Side Story and things like South Pacific.
Mm.
They... They were so beautifully made with such attention to detail and such. And this one in particular, Sound of Music, had, you know, children and nuns and beautiful countryside and a lot of rain, as I mentioned in the book. But really, everything about it, particularly the emphasis on quality music and the great director of photography who was shooting the film for Robert Wise, our director. It was all done first class, and it was a great learning experience.
So many great songs, you know, Doe a Deer.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And High on a Hill, There's a Lonely Goat Herd.
Yes, and I can't yodel to this day, but I gave it a shot.
And now it's like, this must be the best fun ever, doing voices for animations, because you've done it in Despicable Me and you've done it in Shrek. Is that the best fun?
Well, in a way, it means that I don't have to be on camera, but I can, you know, I don't have to think about makeup and hair. I just have to think about the voices.
Yeah.
And I must say, the character in Despicable Me, which is Gru's mum, is one of the most appalling characters I've ever played. She's terrible, but I so enjoy doing it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, because I saw a quote from you in an interview you gave saying, I don't want to be thought of as wholesome. So playing Gru's mother was probably a great release for you.
Well, I think over the years the test of time has kind of dispelled that somewhat wholesome image. But I tell you, certainly Gru's mum helped a lot.
Yeah. What about Hollywood and the parties? And there's a great scene in the book where you walked into a party and somebody referred to you as Mary Poppins and they were offering you what?
Oh, they were offering me some Coke, yeah.
Yes.
But that's just, I didn't party very much, truthfully, Ray. This was just one instance. And everybody thinks that it's so glamorous and that you go out every night and that you're at the best restaurants and so on. Well, occasionally you are, but truly, most of the time you're so busy catching up on rest and doing what's required in terms of you know, paying your dues, doing the publicity and so on. You don't have that much time to go out and be glamorous and so on. But yes, we did go to this party and there was it was the time, it was the era when a lot of Coke was being passed around. And my lovely new husband, Blake Edwards, said, oh, for God's sake, don't give her any. She's high enough on life as it is. Thank God he said that.
Yeah. You mentioned your daughter, Emma, who helped you write the book. And she also, you both write children's books together.
Oh yeah, we've written, honestly, I think about 30, 31 now together. It's such a pleasure. And we enjoy each other very much, and I couldn't have managed this memoir or the other one without her input. She was magnificent.
When you look back on your amazing and varied career, what moments stand out? I know that's a difficult question to answer, and it probably changes from day to day, but what on
well,
this day?
Yes. And what moments stand out?
Yeah.
If you're talking about working, that's one thing. I mean, certainly having my daughter, Emma, giving birth as a mum, being a mum, and my marriage to Blake eventually were huge, important. That's really where I feel almost my best work was. But in terms of movies, how can I tell you that one is more fun than another? Because I was learning all the time and trying new things.
Yeah. You won an Oscar for Mary Poppins, and you were nominated for an Oscar for The Sound of Music.
Mm.
And you say in the book that you reckon that they were unlikely to give you the Oscar the second time, because rarely, if ever, did an actor win it 2 years in a row.
Yep, well, there have been some, but not often, you know.
Yes, yeah. Was that a moment as well, when your name was called out by Sidney Poitier?
Yes. It is a thrill. It really is. I really didn't believe that I was going to win. I've always felt, ever since I was, you know, first went to Hollywood, it's the nomination that is the honor, because you're one of five. These days you're one of 10, I think. But But in those days, you were one of five people that are nominated for, you know, the best performance. And it is a great honor to be nominated. And I never expected to win. Mm-hmm. Really, I didn't.
Do you still have it in a position of prominence?
I hid it for a long, long time.
Why?
I didn't feel so... Well, I wasn't sure about it, and I'm not inclined to show off very much. So it stayed in the attic for a while. Very well looked after, mind you, wrapped up. But then eventually, over the years, I think I acquired a nice office, and I did put it up on the shelf, and I'm very pleased I did.
Yes. Well, that, you know, when you go in on of a morning and look up at it, that was... You know, that's
well,
nice.
Excuse me, I don't do that.
No, I mean, when you're having a bad day, Julie, you know, when you're having a bad day, you go in there, oh, I won an Oscar, there you go, thank you very much.
Well, yes, maybe, but I doubt. No, yeah. I don't think it's that. You ask me about important things in my life, though, and truly things, the humanitarian work that I've done, in terms of what hit me very strongly and made an enormous impression on me was going to Vietnam and Cambodia and Thailand to aid and help an international relief agency that I helped sponsor. And that was a really vast education in a different way and very good for me, and that really did resonate in every way. Not the difficulty in being there, but the pain of seeing how many people in this world, in third world countries, can't get up for being pushed down.
And you adopted two children from Vietnam.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Well, it was politically, it was easy to adopt from Vietnam in those days because the boat people incidents were happening, you know, that whole historical area where people were being either killed or raped or whatever on these boats as they tried to escape. And it was very much in front and center in everyone's mind in those days. And our two lovely girls come from there.
Hmm. There's a nice symmetry.
Were babies. They're now, you know,
adults. Obviously.
They're now adults. Yeah.
You've sort of been in the Queen's company twice.
Well,
or more. Well,
perhaps a few more times. But what a thrill that was!
She came and
well,
she
that
said,
was the Queen Mother. Yes,
oh, the Queen was. Mother. Yes, I've
well,
got that mixed up.
Well, of course, she was Queen at the time.
Yes, she was Queen at the time. Yes.
Yeah, and then I watched our present Queen and her coronation and the fact that her father passed and so on. I'm a great admirer of that lady.
And then you, of course, a dame, so...
Well, that was phenomenal. It really was.
Why was that so special? Because I suppose you've been recognised in the States. Go on.
I think there's like... It's a very private feeling, but the fact that you've been recognised by your queen and country, so to speak, is a tremendous honour. And I hold it... I don't boast about it or anything, but I'm inside, it's a lovely feeling. And that day... I've never seen London look so lovely. It had just rained, but the sun was out, and all those beautiful buildings were shining and white, and the palace was lovely, and Her Majesty was lovely, and it was a beautiful day.
Mm. It's been a real treat talking to you. And you know what they say, never meet your heroes. Well, I've spoken to you.
Oh, do they say that?
They do say that, yes.
Because it's going to be a
disappointment, yes.
Disappointment,
yes,
I see.
Yes.
I never thought about that.
You've gone up my estimation. Not that you care or anything like that. But
well, you too, Ray. I hope we actually get to say hello one day.
Yes, I hope so. Homework, okay. A Memoir of My Hollywood Years is the new book from Dame Julie Andrews. Julie, thank you so much for talking to us.
It's a great pleasure, and thank you so much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 5 on RTE.ie. Cathy is in the car and she says, I was singing along with Julie Andrews singing Doe Deer on the way home, and I continued to sing it, and my son, who has autism, who's pre-verbal, has just sung the end of each of the lines to finish the sentences. He has never sung this before. Isn't that magical?
Yeah.
We have two ladies who would appreciate that. Two Kildare women. Ruth Cahill, how are you doing, Ruth? Eilish Maroney, how are you doing, Eilish? Mm-hmm. And Ruth and Eilish met because they both have children with cystic fibrosis, and they've teamed up together to create a gorgeous little book for parents and siblings of children with CF. And it's going global. It's called Our Baby Has 65 Roses. So, Ruth, you do the illustrations.
That's correct,
and
yes.
Eilish, you did the writing.
I did, yes.
And we'll find out how you met in a moment. But first, we go to you, Ruth. Harry is what age?
He's 11 now.
11, right.
So he's a great kid and full of life. And I suppose CF came into our life from nowhere. We weren't expecting to have our firstborn child to have CF, but he was quite sick when he was born. He had a bowel blockage, which is quite common for children with CF, which we didn't realise. And he was whisked off to from the Coombe to Crumlin Hospital when he was a day old. And that kind of began our journey, that we knew there was something a little bit wrong.
And CF is hereditary.
That's
so
right.
A lot of people would know there's a possibility that their child is going to have CF.
I suppose, yeah. And Ireland has the highest incidence in the world. So 1 in 19 Irish people are carriers of the CF gene. But certainly myself and my husband, we had no idea we were both carriers, especially Harry was our first. So, you know,
so
we were...
So there's no, that you know of, history in the family?
Not in our family. I mean, I know certain families, there are history. You know, people might know a cousin or something like that. But in our family, there was no history on either side.
So as a result, it came as a bit of a shock then.
Huge shock. Harry had obviously the bowel blockage when he was born, but then he had something else. He had failure to thrive, which again is another common thing that can happen to children with CF because they can't absorb food. So they need to take digestive enzymes when they eat. And so he was born 9 pounds, but at 7 weeks, he was 7 pounds.
Right.
He was also so pale. I suppose as a first mum, you're going, what's wrong? And I went to, I rang the Coombe and I said, you know, can I just bring him in for a checkup? And we went in to see the paediatrician. And as soon as she saw him, she said, you've got a very sick kid here. So we went to Crumlin for a test, and he was diagnosed within days with cystic fibrosis.
And what did you know about cystic fibrosis?
I knew about CF because there was a girl in school with me with CF. But even 10 years ago, 11 years ago, you know, there wasn't the positive stories that you hear now. So much has changed. And I suppose that we were filled with fear and worry. You know, everyone just wants the best for their child. And we, you know, we didn't know what to expect. And I suppose that's part of the reason why we wrote the book, was because we want to tell parents that, you know, this is an awful situation you're in, but, you know, life goes on and your child is still a wonderful child and you've got to embrace that.
So you did the illustrations, and when you read Eilish's story, what struck a chord with you was that, you know, this is tough, but you need to treat your child as a child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and we want, you know, people to, like, it's such a scary time. You know, you only want the best for your child. And we wanted to show a positive story and to explain to siblings, you know, that their little baby sister or baby brother that's been born and diagnosed, that, you know, that they have to do all these things each day, which are different to what their siblings do, but that it's not a scary thing. So when they see their brothers and sisters taking nebulizers, for example, and a big mask over their mouth, we want them to not be afraid of that.
Yeah.
You know, and like the babies, they're oblivious to it, but the siblings watching on, they're like, why are mommy and daddy giving them tablets? Why are mommy and daddy...
But it's scary for you as an adult.
Oh, it's very scary, but, you know...
I suppose they tap into that in a way
as
well.
They do, but we wanted to show that, you know, you're not alone and that, you know, there's so many, you know, your baby's still your baby. You know,
and Eilish, Aveen is very much just a baby. She celebrated her first birthday.
Last week, last Wednesday.
Was that a big deal?
It was. It was a huge deal.
Yeah.
We were delighted for her
balloons,
to be born.
All that.
Lots of balloons. We still have lots of balloons in our house. We celebrated her birthday in Limerick with very close family, and then we had a party for her in Selbridge on Saturday.
Okay.
So we had lots of celebrations.
So in the intervening 10 years, when Harry was born and when Aveen was born, so they can detect CF a lot Yeah. Sooner.
So Aveen was born last year on the 9th of October. And when she was born, she was a good weight. She was 6 pounds, 12 ounces. She was very long. You know, all seemed to be fine. And I was only saying to Ruth today, when I think of the first 3 weeks, because we found out when Aveen was 3 weeks old through the heel prick test, when we got the results of it, you know, we had started to think that something wasn't right. We couldn't put our finger on it. But basically, like the book says, she fed all the time. We couldn't keep her full. And she did a lot of dirty nappies. And the week that we got her diagnosis, I remember the Monday of that week, I could see that her tummy was sore. She was making noises. Her little tummy was sore. I had her over and weighed, I think, 3 times. And she actually never dropped weight. She just was never putting on as much weight as she should have. Mm. And I have a cousin in Canada who's son was born a week before Aveen, and he was sending me photos of his son, and I remember just looking saying, why is this baby thriving and my baby isn't putting on as much weight? And that really...
And what about the history then of cystic fibrosis in your family?
Yeah, so there is cystic fibrosis back in my family, but on one side it was far back, so it was a shock to my husband and I as well that we were carriers, you know. So but it is great now that, you know, there's so much knowledge, and, you know, we want to spread awareness as well. Mm. And, you know, like Ruth, I knew it was something to do with the lungs, but, you know, I'm learning I didn't know it affects your digestive system.
How do you explain it to adults? You explain it in the book to
say it's a genetically inherited disease that primarily affects the lungs and the digestive system. And that's just like a broad umbrella term, because it actually, there's more, but that's just basically the basis.
I would always say it's like stickiness. So inside your entire body, bar your brain and your heart, is sticky.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, bugs are sticking to the sticky. So it's sticking to the inside of your bowels, sticking to your sinuses, sticking to your lungs, your pancreas. So all the organs are basically consumed with stickiness. And that's how I would describe
it to people.
And two people
with CF can't...
Even today, we have to keep the children apart.
Yeah.
So I would always meet for a walk. We always go to Castletown for walks, but my kids would be at school and I can meet her with the baby because, but we can't be together. So we can't.
Why is that?
All people with CF, they contain certain bugs, and they can pass those bugs easily to another person. So you and I might have those bugs, but we won't pass them to each other, but they can pass it to each other. And there are certain bugs that are antibiotic resistant and things like that. And we wouldn't want to put either family in danger or either child
in
danger.
Isn't there a movie out at the moment? I've seen it.
Yeah, Five Feet Apart.
5 Feet Apart.
Yeah.
So there it's a boyfriend, girlfriend thing.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly.
Met in hospital, but they can't hang out together.
Exactly. And I mean, we have another child in our school. My son's in fifth class and there's another child in the school. And we have to just make precautions. So, you know, my son would be on the upper level in the school and the other child would be downstairs. They're not in the library at the same time. They can't go to cake sales at the same time, you know. But it's great to work with the school, and we work with the other family. And it's great to be able to say, you know, that... as much as we're all in the same community, because there's plenty of people with CF within Kildare, I think there's 46, but you know, there are people in our town and we just have to work
avoid
together
them.
Yeah, work together
to
you know
them,
is the
yeah.
way I'd rather than avoiding.
Now you gave up work as a graphic designer to take care of Harry.
That's right.
And you kept your hand in literally at the drawing,
and it's great. I find it so therapeutic. I started off just doing cards for friends, and you know, people would have new babies and I would make them pictures, and I suppose it grew from there. And as a carer, you can work 15 hours a week, so I suppose I'd never have started my business if it wasn't for Harry. And I say that to him all the time.
And you wouldn't have met Eilish either.
I wouldn't have met so many people, and the CF community is very close, you know. We're all in it together because we've all got a common goal, which is to...
So how did you two meet?
Well, it was through my cousin. So my cousin lives, Niamh, if she's listening, she lives in Maynooth, and she was supporting the local Christmas market, and she saw that Ruth had a sign up that she was giving some of her proceeds to CF Ireland, and she just mentioned that I had just had Aveen and that we were living in Selbridge, and Ruth said, oh, here, give her my card, and when she wants to talk, let her know that I'm here for her and I'd be happy to talk to her. So I think it was in January I rang you just for a chat.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing that I have realised is that anytime I've rang either a person with cystic fibrosis or a parent of a person with cystic fibrosis, no one has said, oh, I can't talk right now. The community is really amazing. So this was in the middle of the day. You just answered and spoke. And then a few weeks later, I wrote the story and I contacted another mother who had set up her own production company, and she said, you know, this wouldn't be exactly my line. It's another CF mother. She said, do you know Ruth Cahill? She's a graphic designer. And I said, yeah, I met her there a few weeks ago. So she said, why don't you contact Ruth? So I contacted Ruth, and Ruth just said, yeah, send me on the story. I'd love to work with you, without even reading it. So it was really amazing. So,
but the minute I saw that, read the story, I mean, you know, I was saying to someone before, when Harry was first diagnosed, the, you know, the hospital, and they do their amazing, our team in Crumlin, but they hand you this booklet, and I was saying to your researcher, you know, that the child in the booklet looked like Chucky from whatever that horror movie was years ago. And, you know, even it was so out of date, there was in the past, people used to use a wedge for physiotherapy, so the child would be on like this triangular wedge and you'd be walloping their back, and yeah, that's like so far past. Yeah. Now they use something called a pep mask, yeah, or a cappella, and yeah, you know, every bit of information or literature that we were given was just so out of date. And the minute I saw this story, I was like, wow, this is we need this right now, because now children are picked up on the heel prick, yeah, which wasn't in the before.
This is fantastic.
You know, now there's pep masks, now their nebulizers aren't these big, you know, big machines. They're these little portable, like Discman kind of size.
They're not noisy.
Yeah, they're silent.
And it's, our baby has 65 roses, yeah, and there's a dog in it, and there's, yeah, an older sibling, an older brother.
Yes.
So Baxter's the dog.
Baxter, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Your illustrations are beautiful. They're just so cute.
Thank you.
So you have a style. That's, as an, yeah, illustrator, you need a style.
I suppose I like in my illustrations to have a lot of white space. So I do predominantly cards, and on my cards I would have like one nice little illustration with a lot of white space around it. So I just, to me, that's a warm, you know, and I suppose each, yeah, page we only were having one sentence of like maybe two lines. And, mm-hmm, you know, I said, you know, let's just have a really nice, simple illustration with two lines on each page, and it be a story, yeah, that you can read to siblings. And it's aimed at, you know, preschool age, that the kids can, you know, just find out what's happening to their new sibling.
Yeah, that's been hugely well received.
Yeah, it's going really well. We've just had a hospital in Vancouver contacted us in the last 2 weeks, and the CF nurse contacted us because the patient brought in the book and they loved it, so we've sent them 10 copies. And there is that medical institute in New Jersey,
yeah,
they bought I think around 7, and then kind of every week we're getting international sales.
It's on Amazon, so I suppose that gives us a global reach. So yeah, we've had, you know, sales this week to New Zealand, yeah, Australia. For Aveen's birthday, we, yeah, decided to do a, you know, you know, let's support Aveen on her birthday and let's do a special offer for the day. And and it was amazing how many people, you know, were like, happy birthday, Aveen. And yeah, I've just bought the book and it's going all the way to Australia. And we're in all the libraries in Ireland, which is, yeah, fantastic. It's so nice.
To see something like that, Leo, your work, mm-hmm, produced like that, must be very fulfilling. And it also means that as parents of children with CF, that you're, yeah, not just sitting down and you're doing something.
Yeah. And that's why CF Ireland jumped on board with this book, because, yeah, we, you know, the story was so beautiful. I did the illustrations. We said, let's just talk to CF Ireland, see what their point of view is, or do they have any pointers for us? And we went into a meeting with Philip Watt and a few of the team in CF Ireland, and they were like, this is the resource that we don't have. And this is, like, this isn't just for Ireland. This is a global resource. Right. You know, there's 70,000 people, I think, worldwide with CF, and the population, the age is just going up and up. But every year there's still babies, you know, I think in Ireland it's 46 babies are born in, yeah, each year in Ireland.
Isn't that encouraging as well? Because there was a time when the average age that a person with CF died was around 29, I think,
yeah,
in Ireland.
Yeah.
We had the lowest death age.
Whereas now,
European country,
you
now,
know, it's getting bigger and bigger, yeah, and the new medicines like Orkambi and Kalydeco, and next year there's a really, really promising drug, which is a triple combo is what we're calling it right now, with no official name yet, and it's due to be licensed next year. And, you know, I saw on Twitter the other day someone with a lung function of 30-something had gone up to 90. Yeah. You know, this is changing people's, yes, lives, and, yeah, we know that our kids are going to live long lives because these medicines
and
are
active lives. Like
and
Harry,
active.
Harry was running.
Oh, he's amazing.
On Sunday.
He just ran in the cross country and got sixth in Kildare. You know, it was about 100
county.
In the county.
Right.
Yeah. So there was about 100 kids running, and he does his park runs every week. And you know, sport is so important for CF, keeping the lungs,
moving,
you know, moving and active. So Harry does these he's a nearly a red belt in taekwondo. He, you know, he runs, he does hurling, and this week actually he's his school are in the final of the Cumann na Bunscoil, I think it is, in Kildare. So we'll be off to to Newbridge to the match.
That's very encouraging for you to see Eilish, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. It's just brilliant. And like, you know, when we obviously got the news about Aveen, yes, it was a shock, but like this, all the new medical advances, I am so grateful that we found out at 3 weeks, because as soon as she got her enzymes, she just started piling on the weight and she is so content, you know, and it's just great to see her thrive, you know, and that's all she has done this year is literally thrive. Yeah. You know, she loves her grub. She's a very happy baby. She sleeps well and, you know, the future is bright. And that's why I wrote this, because you can get overwhelmed. You're at home by yourself. Your partner's gone back to work and you're just looking at your baby and you can get sidetracked thinking about CF, but these words remind me to see the bigger picture.
Okay.
And that's what we want people to see.
So Our Baby Has 65 Roses, written by Eilish Maroney, illustrated by Ruth Cahill. You're a sort of a strong combination, strong team now. Yeah. Will there be more books in the offing?
Hopefully. Hope so, yeah. She has to write the magic I'll illustrate it.
Right now.
They'll work together, but it's been a brilliant project to work on. So
yeah.
Great. Where can people get it?
In Dubray Books, and we have it on Amazon and we have it on CF Ireland's website, and we have it, it's supplied in Alan Hanna's and
O'Mahony's
and International Educational Services. Okay.
And loads of places.
Yeah, and CF Ireland also, you can contact CF Ireland and they can post it out.
You want to say hello to somebody? We don't normally do this sort of thing.
I want to say hi to my gorgeous Emily, my daughter Emily, who's 9, and to Harry, of course, and I wanted to wish Harry's school good luck. Gaels Cailleach and Maynooth are in the final of the hurling on Thursday, and I wanted to wish Deglan and all the boys best of luck in the final. I know you're going to win it.
Right. Eilish, do you want to say hello to anybody?
I'll just say hi to Louise and Lisa, who are babysitting Aveen.
Why don't you do what babysitting? And everybody who knows me.
Everyone knows me.
Lovely to meet you, Ruth.
You too. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
5 on 5 on RAID.RTE. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, just before we go, just to catch up on some texts we got in there. This book is something badly needed. Ruth and Eilish have done something amazing for the CF community. When I was diagnosed, my mum was given nothing about CF. Having this book will really help new families. So there. And another act of kindness, Ray, just to show how generous we are. Last Wednesday, I was let down by a taxi company. I hailed down a taxi on Fortfield Road. A lady waved to indicate she was not working. After dropping her son to Turnure College, this lovely lady came back down and insisted I get in, and she practically brought me to where I had an appointment for 9:30. I took out €25 to pay her. She totally refused payment. I couldn't get her to accept payment. Her name was Rachel and she lives in Dublin 12. An angel, says that person. And on Julie Andrews, wonderful interview with Julie Andrews, says that person. Fantastic interview. What a beautiful person. Such a delight to hear her beautiful diction. Her enunciation is just beyond belief. And when you listen back to those songs, that's probably part of her appeal, wasn't it? Brilliant singer, nice actor. She had the whole package. That's one of the best interviews I've ever heard in your show. It was like she was your friend and wanted to chat rather than the usual time-restricted, boring response interviews. And Kieran wants to know, what's it like to have someone of her calibre to appear to be on first-name terms with you, constantly saying your name? Well, it's thrilling, Kieran. And we were told we only had 15 minutes with Julie Andrews, but that was over 20 minutes long, 23 minutes and 6 seconds to be exact. Listen to your fabulous interview with Julie Andrews. I've taught our granddaughter the song Do a Deer, a female deer who, and she lives in Austria, not far from Salzburg. We walked through the village singing that wonderful song, says Anne-Marie. Isn't that lovely? I have Sound of Music on vinyl. What an album. Some great songs. High on a Hill is Lonely. I won't even attempt to sing that. And there's loads more, which we don't have time to get to. We might get to them tomorrow. That's it from us. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back on the radio at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.